Good day, and welcome to the National Foundation for American Policy's call, the Costs of Ending Birthright Citizenship Conference. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have an opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touchtone phone. Please note this call may be recorded. It is now my pleasure to turn the conference over to Mr. Stuart Anderson. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. My name is Stuart Anderson, Executive Director of the National Foundation for American Policy, which is a nonpartisan public policy research organization started in 2003, focusing primarily on trade and immigration. The report we're releasing today on the cost to Americans in America of ending birthright citizenship can be found on our website at www.nfap.com. I'd like to thank the Carnegie Corporation of New York for providing a grant to help make this research possible. Birthright citizenship guarantees U.S. citizenship to almost all babies born on U.S. soil, with the children of diplomats the primary exception. We'll first hear today from the author of the report, Margaret Stock, who is counsel to the firm at the Anchorage office of Lane Powell, a retired U.S. Army Reserve officer in the Military Police Corps. Margaret has written and testified extensively on U.S. citizenship, immigration, and national security matters. She's also a member of the American Bar Association's Commission on Immigration. We'll turn to Margaret. Margaret?
Thank you very much, Stuart. This study is quite timely because recently an advisor to presidential candidate Mitt Romney on immigration issues has announced his vocal support for proposals to change or reinterpret the 14th Amendment. Now, we still don't know what Mr. Romney's position is on these issues, but interestingly, at least one of the proposals to change the 14th Amendment would call into question whether Mitt Romney himself is eligible for the presidency. So the implications of this study are clear. What happens if Mitt Romney's advisor gets his way and birth in the United States is no longer enough to make one a citizen of the United States? Advocates for change, such as Mr. Romney's advisor, have proposed a variety of ways to change the 14th Amendment and its meaning. One obvious one is a constitutional amendment, but they've also proposed a statutory change and an interstate compact in which individual states would individually pass legislation that would attempt to change the 14th Amendment's meaning. And then they would work together as a group to try to get that passed. Personally, I believe a constitutional amendment is necessary to change the 14th Amendment. But for purposes of argument, the study examines what would happen if, in fact, we changed the 14th Amendment. And basically, if the fact of your birth within the United States is no longer sufficient to prove that you have a claim to American citizenship, then a large number of bureaucratic systems must be retooled in the United States. And the main points of the paper are that repealing birthright citizenship would turn every birth into a legal event for American parents. Everyone would have to pay attorneys, government fees, and so forth to prove that a child was born a United States citizen. So this will impact every American, not just a small population of unauthorized immigrants. Essentially, changing the rules would create a tax of $600 to $1,600 on every child born in America, and that's documented in the paper. In addition to that, there are many other unsavory side effects from changing the 14th Amendment. We would create many more unauthorized children. We would potentially call into question the citizenship of children of dual citizens, such as Mitt Romney. We would cause additional fiscal problems for Social Security and other programs, increase the shadow economy, reduce the tax base, and there would be other consequences, including serious social ones, of creating a much larger set of stateless children. So that's a brief summary of what the study explains. But the bottom line is that people should be extremely cautious about moving in this direction. Ordinary Americans will be hurt the most by changing the current rule. It's an extremely costly proposal, even to those who have absolutely no problems proving their status. They'll still have to go through the drill of proving it at great expense. Changing the rules would upend many lives, cause grave uncertainty, and add bureaucratic burdens to everyone. It also won't solve any immigration problems. It will just create a lot of new problems. Like other proposals to increase the verification of people's status at various points in their lives, this particular proposal to change the 14th Amendment fails a cost-benefit analysis. That's a brief summary of what's in the study. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you very much, Margaret. Next, we'll hear from Grover Norquist, President of Americans for Tax Reform. Grover is the creator of the Taxpayer Protection Pledge signed by 279 members of Congress. He's been called the most effective policy advocate in Washington. In addition to his many other accomplishments, Grover will go down as the only conservative in American history to receive a positive profile on the TV program 60 Minutes. Grover?
Actually, this is the conference operator. We lost Grover's line about a minute ago.
Okay. Let's now turn to Linda Chavez, and then we'll come back to Grover after Linda speaks. We'll hear from Linda Chavez, who's a syndicated columnist, Fox News analyst, and chair of the Center for Equal Opportunity. Linda has held many important government positions, was a candidate for the U.S. Senate, is the author of 3 books, and is an important influential conservative thinker on a range of issues that include education, labor relations, and immigration. Linda?
Thank you very much, Stuart. I'm going to take a little bit different tack on this. Certainly the questions of costs and benefits are important, and I really appreciate the study that Margaret did. But I also think there are great implications for politics and particularly for conservatism. It is my view that the conservative movement is really, by embracing the idea, number one, of making the whole question of illegal immigration so prominent a feature of public discourse, but more importantly, questioning the idea of birthright citizenship, is a real detriment to the growth of conservatism in America. The whole idea that we would create a class of new illegal aliens really, to me, questions the sincerity of people who say that illegal immigration and the presence of so many people illegally in the United States is the greatest concern, because this would create thousands of new illegal aliens, thereby increasing that population. But more importantly, I think it really does hit to the heart of who we are as a people and as a nation. And one of the things that has differentiated us throughout our history as a nation is that we did not count as a requirement for citizenship long historical ties to the country. We didn't, after the resolution of slavery in the United States and the Civil War and the 14th Amendment itself. We did not count race as a factor until we passed exclusionary laws, immigration laws at the end of the 19th century. So this would be, in my view, a tremendous step backward, would interfere with the ideals of the nation, and would, in terms of its impact on politics, be disastrous because it would alienate one of the largest growing demographic groups in the United States, making Hispanics feel that they had in fact been targeted, singled out, and were not welcome in the conservative ranks. And I think this would have disastrous implication in our politics. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Now Grover is back on the line, and I'm not sure if he heard his introduction before, but it was very nice, Grover. And why don't we just quickly turn to you now?
Sure, absolutely. I'm on an Amtrak train, so pardon the background noise. The study Margaret Stock put together on the cost to Americans of the idea of ending birthright citizenship, I think everybody in the country ought to read. This goes through not just the cost of the country's founding ideals, but for those people who want to look at dollars, this is a tax on every child being born. It gives you legal costs. It gives you all sorts of uncertainty. People could go through much of their lives uncertain as to their status. They would have to pay a great deal of money to make sure that there was no uncertainty. And even then, of course, these things become something that people can litigate. When you decide that everybody has to get some legal document before X can happen, this is the same thing that we went through when some of the states started saying that the government should stand between you and the job. The government should stand there, and before you can get a job, the government would decide whether or not you're allowed to work in the United States, and you'd have to have all sorts of documentation to prove who you were. And of course, once you put a policeman between anybody and being employed, that policeman doesn't just have to look for citizenship. That policeman can look for any number of things. And when you add these sorts of costs to people being born in the United States, the kind of putting a political barrier between somebody being born here and being a citizen is something that can be added to. It solves no problems and, in fact, instead creates all sorts of problems and costs to Americans now and in the future. I don't think this will happen. I think having the threat of it is political gain that some people are playing, is that we're not going to get a constitutional amendment enacted to do this. But of course, yes, it does require a constitutional amendment. When you amend the Constitution, good conservatives believe you don't do that just through legislation or through ignoring the Constitution. You have to amend the Constitution. So one, conservatives should always be concerned about amending the Constitution. It's a very serious thing to do. Two, we should certainly be opposed to amending the Constitution through some law rather than the amendment itself. We don't want our Second Amendment rights taken away from us by a law ignoring the Second Amendment, or our First Amendment rights taken away by some edict from HHS. So we shouldn't want the 14th Amendment amended by a simple law. And lastly, I think that the Stocks study does do a very good job of going through just Margaret Stocks' piece on the actual costs, and these are small-c conservative estimates of the cost that families will have to go through to get their children certified. And you can only imagine that once the government gets into it, the cost, the fee, the tax, the fee that people have to pay for this will grow every year.
Great.
That's me.
Great. Well, thank you, Grover. Now we're going to open up for questions.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star and 1 on your touch-tone phone. You may remove yourself from the question queue at any time by pressing the pound key. Again, star and 1 to ask a question. And our first question comes from the site of Claudia Gomez with Hispanic Link News Service. Go ahead, your line is open.
Yeah, hi. This is Charlie Erickson with Hispanic Link News Service, and I would like to know how you arrive at the figures of $600 or whatever figures that it would cost, and is that every parent or child? And also, where do you, and particularly for Linda, who I haven't talked to for a while, who's behind this kind of a legislation, and can you as a commentator make some comment as to the importance and the value and why anybody would introduce this kind of a piece of legislation?
Margaret, why don't you go quickly first? And
sure. The cost figure comes from Department of Homeland Security numbers themselves, and let me explain that briefly. They have a process right now where they adjudicate petitions from parents whose children were born outside the United States. U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services is a user fee agency, so they set a fee for the process of looking at parents' paperwork to figure out whether their children are citizens or not, and that fee is based on the bureaucratic cost of processing the paperwork, paying the employees, and so forth and so on. So it's a fair estimate of what it costs to look at parents' paperwork and determine whether their child is a citizen or not. They're doing that already, but they're only doing it right now for people who live outside the United, whose children were born outside the United States. So, for example, John McCain was born outside the United States. And so if he applied for a certificate of citizenship with the Department of Homeland Security today, it would cost him $600. That's the user fee that USCIS charges for that adjudication. So I think that's a fair estimate of what it would cost to do the adjudication for people born inside the United States, since it's basically looking at the same paperwork and the same facts.
Hey, Linda?
Well, I might just add that I recently had to confront this in a personal way when my 90-year-old mother wanted to fly with me from Virginia to Colorado, and her federal ID had expired. Now, my mother's maiden name was Velma Lucy McKenna. She was blonde-haired, now white-haired and blue-eyed. But she had to prove that she was, you know, a legal U.S. citizen and born in the United States. And when you're dealing with somebody of that age, they don't generally have their birth certificate around. And it cost me not quite $600, but it cost me about $400 by the time I was through doing overnight express mailing and everything else to get to track down her vital records and get a copy and in order for her to be able to fly on an airplane. So this whole idea of proving U.S. citizenship and the right to U.S. citizenship is a lot more complicated, a lot more difficult than people anticipate. And I would say in answer to your question, Charlie, that, you know, what is behind this? You know, I think there is some sentiment, you know, in the United States that people who come here illegally should not have the benefit of having children who are then U.S. citizens. And there is, of course, the ugly term, and I think incorrect term, of anchor baby that's thrown around a lot. And there is, I think, a widespread misunderstanding, indeed ignorance on the subject, that suggests that some people come here illegally precisely to have children in order to then have a leg up in terms of being able to become legally admitted to the United States. And that, I think, gives an awfully lot of credit to people in their forward planning, because those children will not be able to sponsor their parents until they're 21 years of age. And if their parents have come here illegally, those parents will have to go home and stay for 10 years in their country of origin. So I think this is nonsense, but that is, that's what's out there. That's what people think. And apparently, you know, the people promoting this somehow think this is going to give them some political advantage, even though all the polling data I have seen suggests that the whole question of illegal aliens and illegal immigration has very little salience in the election. People do not see this as a major issue in this election. And so I think it's really counterproductive.
Clover here. I think it's important to remember this is an opening bid. If you make this certificate mandatory on 4 million people a year, that fee will increase. And the way the government figures fees is they say, not how much does it cost us to do something, it's how much do we spend on our bureaucracy that does this, divided by the number of people that we can tax, and announce that that's the cost per person of doing it. So that is an infinitely expandable number. There's a not insignificant percentage political movement in the country that wants to decrease the number of people. You can imagine a tax on having babies would be particularly attractive to the zero population growth people. And so every year there'll be this effort, oh, let's raise that tax to pay for fill in the blank.
If I can add a question, do you see any of these bills suggest that they can go back and check past births and in effect, would that raise the risk of profiling?
Well, this is Margaret Stock. I don't personally think it would be constitutional for them to go back and do that, but certainly some of the proponents of these proposals have suggested that it should be retroactive. In fact, one of them filed a brief with the Supreme Court on that issue and said it should be retroactive. So they are pushing to have it retroactive, and you should know that right now the State Department is going through a lot of retroactive revocations of U.S. citizenship, which are causing great harm to many people's lives. There was a story in the New York Times the other day about a young man who got a passport when he was a small child, and now State Department is claiming that they made a mistake and he shouldn't have been given it, and he's now been turned into an undocumented immigrant overnight. So some of these proposals could potentially have retroactive effect. Again, though, I don't think that would be constitutional.
Thank you.
Next question.
The next question comes from the site of Aziz Hanafa with India Abroad. Go ahead, your line is open.
Yeah, I really had a follow-up to what Charlie asked in terms of racial profiling and perhaps Margaret, and taking off from what Linda spoke of and also Grover. With all the xenophobia that seems to be going around in this political season and political environment, There has been fears that these kinds of things can lead to a lot of racial profiling. So apart from the political and economic and taxation, can this kind of thing lead to that kind of profiling, especially among Asian groups, Hispanic groups, etc.?
I don't know who wants to tackle that.
Short answer, yes.
Right.
I could just add to that that the passport revocation seemed to be going mainly after folks that are of one particular ethnic group.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear your answer. If you could speak up a little louder, please.
Well, based on what the State Department's been doing with the passports, it's possible that there might be some racial profiling involved. But, they're trying to apply this across the board, so the proponents argue that there won't be any racial profiling because they're going to do this to everybody. So they would argue it's a check on every single baby, and they're not just targeting particular babies.
And my understanding is some of the proposals, even like temporary visa holders, would that their children wouldn't necessarily be U.S. citizens under some of the proposals. So that would obviously, harm a lot of people who come here to work as skilled immigrants, for example.
Yes, and there's millions of those folks in the United States that are here legally, and their children wouldn't have any status at all. So if you're a professor at a college and you're here on a treaty NAFTA visa or a J visa or an O visa or something, and you have a baby in America, your baby would not have any status in the United States.
Again, I think it really is important to note that what this would do would be to create, exponentially increase the number of illegal aliens in the United States. It would do nothing to help decrease that number. And there is no appetite in the United States, as there should not be, to rounding up and deporting people. So that this would really create, as Margaret has said, this whole group of stateless people, many of whom would not be eligible for citizenship in, the country of origin of their parents. So this is, I just think this is such a nightmare one cannot imagine.
All right, next question.
The next question comes from the site of Juan Esparza with Vida en el Valle. Go ahead, your line is open.
Yes, thank you. Good morning. It's pretty early up here on the West Coast. My question is, how much traction do you see coming from either the Republican Party or the conservative movement on this? I know that birthright citizenship has been coming up on and off through the years, but is it more likely to be pushed a lot stronger this year than in previous years?
Well, I'm going to have to jump off quickly, so I'm going to get my answer in here. I think that every election year, these kinds of issues get raised. They often get raised in some effort to court, different segments of the voting population. I think that, there certainly are groups like the Federation for American Immigration Reform, Center for Immigration Studies, those kinds of groups out there that consistently push this, and certainly there is an effort in the states to push these laws, and they're actually having some success there. So I think it's becoming a wedge political issue, and it's just unfortunate that it's also being considered at the federal level, and that there are as many supporters of bills like this at the federal level, given the clear unconstitutionality of it if it is promoted as a statute as opposed to a constitutional amendment. And, as I say, the clear, affront to the ideals of the nation. And with that, I have to, unfortunately, leave the conference. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. We'll be able to take more questions. One thing I would add to what Linda just said is that I think the value of Margaret's study is that it's kind of another example of folks who are proposing very harsh measures to deal with illegal immigration, but have clearly not thought through the consequences of their proposals. And I think it should hopefully give people pause to be adopting other types of proposals, that aren't this particular proposal, because if the folks who are pushing this haven't thought through some of these very obvious implications, what aren't they thinking through and telling people about for some of their other proposals? We could probably take another question.
The next question comes from the site of Fawn Johnson with National Journal. Go ahead. Your line is open.
Thanks, guys. This is mainly maybe a slightly broader question for Mr. Norquist. I was following you, about 5-6 years ago when you were heavily involved in the immigration debate generally, and I just was curious, aside from the side issue of birthright citizenship that has come up on the conservative front, if you have any sense of whether a broader immigration agenda is helpful to conservatives at this point?
Well, I think a sound immigration policy is helpful to conservatives. You certainly have concerns from the agriculture industry and the hospitality industry that they have no way of getting a guest worker program, that they clearly need or some way to get at a minimum temporary workers in. So it's an economic issue there. Talk to the high-tech community, and they're very unhappy that their ability to get H-1B visas for high-tech workers has been greatly limited. I've been talking to guys out in Silicon Valley. The Obama administration has just been punitive in going after not allowing high-tech workers in. Some people think it's politically directed, some just as some way to show that they're tough on the issue or something. But that's the administration's viewed by the high-tech guys as abusive on the subject. But the caps are there. So even if the administration was trying not to make these political decisions politically, there would be limits where it'd have to be made some way. So, of course, it'd be political. And it opens itself up to that kind of corruption. So there are huge problems from the free market, limited government sense to the present immigration policies that we have today. I think that to the concerns that some people have that somebody come and go on welfare, that's an argument for welfare reform and a winning issue for Republicans, separate from where anybody's born.
And do you feel like, is there an ability within the conservatives, the Republican Party, to actually have a conversation like that? Because there's a lot, as you point out, there's a lot of rhetoric that's floating around that probably isn't going to come to anything, but it does stir up the base.
Yes, and it's frustrating, and it's why people sort of reach out or lash out for some of these non-solution quick fixes that have costs that they don't mean. I doubt that any... an average citizen who answers yes to a polling question about birthright citizenship being stripped has any sense of what the cost of that is in terms of individual liberty or financial costs. It just hasn't been discussed. So there needs to be a broader conversation nationally, but also within the movement. And of course, in the middle of a presidential campaign is probably the worst time to expect an informed conversation by Republicans, Democrats, or independents on something like this.
Thank you.
Do we have any more questions?
Yes, we do. The next question comes from Elise Foley with the Huffington Post. Go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Thanks for having the call. I had a question for Mr. Norquist. I was wondering if you spent any time talking to lawmakers or talking to the campaigns about this issue.
Other than generically to speak to each of the presidential campaigns about the importance of having a pro-growth immigration policy, as well as the simple question of making sure that they stay away from some of the both voices and individuals who are pushing for, who use high-octane rhetoric that is unuseful, unhelpful, and bad politics if the other's not important enough to them. Obviously, I focus on the tax issue in terms of politics, but I do advise all candidates to be serious about a pro-growth, pro-liberty immigration policy, and to avoid all senses of being hostile or insensitive to the immigrants who come here and over hundreds of years built the country.
Thanks.
Do we have any more questions?
One last question left in queue. It's from the side of Regina Garcia with the Houston Chronicle. Go ahead, your line is open.
Yep, thank you. This question is for Mr. Norquist. You know, with
could you speak up, please?
Sure. Typically, you know, conservatives, you know, they always call for a smaller government, Do you think this this proposal of you know, stripping from birthright citizenship would goes against it because people will be taxed? I mean, they will be they will have to pay $600.
Short answer, yes.
And do you think that this, at the same time, is alienating them from the core group of Hispanic voters?
Short answer, yes.
Thank you.
Great. If we have no other questions, I'd like to thank Grover and Linda and Margaret for taking their time to be on this call and for everyone who is been participating. There were a lot of good questions, and I think this is you know, a very lively topic beyond even the specifics of the study. There should be a recording of this on our website at www.nfap.com, and a copy of the study is available there as well. Thank you, everyone.
Take it easy.
This concludes today's conference. You may now disconnect.